Welcome to Private Club Radio, your weekly source for industry education, news and discussion. Broadcasting from Tampa, Florida, ladies and gentlemen, here is your host, Gabriel Aloisi.
Hey, welcome to Private Club Radio. So happy to be back home in Tampa. I've been gone for a week, but it's been an exciting week. I was at my new client, the Club at Hammock Beach, over there in St. Augustine, Florida. That was really fun. Got to play some golf with Rick Coffey, who you know here from the inbox. And congratulations to Rick Coffey, by the way. He started his new business, Rick Coffey Club Consulting. So hats off to Rick there. We had an awesome match at Hammock Beach on the Ocean Course, which if you've never played that course, just an incredible property. It has about four or five holes that are right on the ocean. Just some spectacular views. And the wind was howling. Rick had me down by three holes with four holes to play in a match play competition setting. And luckily, I was able to rally back. On the 18th hole, I stepped up and I hit a shot a little bit right. And it flew right into the bunker. I thought the ball was going to be in the bunker, but it was actually in between a little patch of grass as the bunker was cut in some very high cabbage, I guess is the best way to describe it. Just some spinach out there. It was buried, and I was 189 yards out, and I knew I couldn't probably get there on the fly. So, and if I did, it wasn't going to hold anyways because the greens were very hard, and they just weren't holding even wedges into the green. So I knew I needed to bounce it up. So normally that's about a 5-iron shot for me, but I pulled the 4-iron knowing that the rough was going to eat my club a little bit. Choked up on it because I'm on kind of a side hill lie in this cabbage and just blasted it out of there. And somehow, some way, it landed about 20 yards in front of the green and rolled and kept rolling and rolling and rolling right up the hill. And landed about 2 feet from the pin. I was able to knock the putt in and tie Rick Coffey on the 18th hole. That was pretty cool at Hammock Beach. So that was a fun little excursion that we had. In addition to that, I was speaking with the PGA Tour Properties membership directors and marketing folks at their conference at TPC Sawgrass. That was my first time at Sawgrass as well. And just want to say thank you to Jeff Gilland for inviting me to that. And Brittany Callier, who was running that conference. They took great care of me, and we had a lot of fun that day. I did have a little problem with my clicker. It was busted, but anyways, we got through the presentation. I think everybody learned a little something about membership marketing, which is really fun. Then my next stop on this journey was to PodFest, which is an international podcasting conference in Orlando, Florida, which I was speaking at, as well as attending, because I like to check out all the new gear, get new ideas for the show, and just have an interesting time with some interesting folks from around the world. So that was an awesome conference as well. People enjoyed the presentation I gave there, which is pretty cool, and met some really interesting folks, some who you may even know. So if you remember from American Idol, I think it was season 3, there was a guy named William Hung, and he was singing a song by Ricky Martin, She Bang, She Bang. And they made a ton of fun of him, actually, there. And he kind of became an internet meme, an internet sensation, if you will. But it's an interesting story because he took that adversity and that challenge and really turned it into a positive. So whereas he could have just faded into the background after his 15 minutes of fame, he's really trying to do something positive with it. I thought that was a really cool story. There's also the driver from Gravedigger, if you're a fan of monster trucks. He was there at the conference. And there was also a passenger from the United flight that landed in the Hudson, the Miracle in the Hudson. There was one of the last guys off the plane. He was there too. So some cool folks, some really interesting people, in addition to podcasters from all over the world. Just great to talk shop and hopefully make this show a lot better for you guys. So that was my week. I'm back in Tampa, Florida, and it's great to be here. Now, I want to remind you guys, because it's been a while since we had some new folks in our private Facebook group. We have something called the Private Club Listeners Forum in Facebook. All you have to do is just search Private Club Radio on Facebook, and asked to enter the group. And I love to have listeners in there starting conversations, chatting with each other, getting ideas and best practices. Because if we don't talk to each other and we just stay in our little cocoons, we can't drive this industry forward. And that's what we're trying to do. And right now we have a voting going on in that group for kind of a group hashtag or a statement that we want to kind of use as our rallying cry, as our battle cry, if you will, something that we can help recognize each other, other change makers, other club innovators out there. So I would love for you to jump in that group and also vote on our new hashtag, because we're going to have a lot of fun with that. I'm going to have some prizes and some things that go along with it. And I think it could be something really good for this industry if you would join us. So please do. Just search Private Club Radio in your Facebook. All right. Well, it's my pleasure to bring on our featured guests of the day. Well, today I'm joined by Joseph Abley and Dave Duval of Club Board Professionals. They are a strategy and financial consulting firm for member-owned clubs. Gentlemen, welcome to Private Club Radio.
Thanks, Gabe.
Thank you, Gabe.
Yeah. So, Dave, I want to start off with you. I'd love to start by just learning some more about the services that you guys offer there at Club Board Professionals.
Sure. Well, Joe and I have a substantial amount of experience serving on club boards. We each served about a dozen years as board members, 6 years as treasurers of our clubs, and multiple years as presidents. When we finished up our volunteer service, we thought, okay, how do we use all this information that we learned over the last dozen years? And how do we share what we wish we knew way back when with newer board members and clubs in general? We did reach out to a number of consultants that we know in the industry. I know we're going to talk about that a little bit later in the conversation, to make sure that we weren't stepping on any toes, and also to make sure that we were addressing a need into a man that thought that we were doing something that others were not. We are heavily financially focused. We work in complementary fashion on strategic assessments. We try and train board members. The big thing for us is long-term financial planning for clubs. Oftentimes, due to the nature of turnover in boardrooms, it's difficult for plans to be passed from administration to administration unless there is a clear financial plan, and that's different from any other plan, available to pass along. Our services wind through best practices. We put together a list of practices over our years of service, and we'll refine it with the help of a peer group of general managers in the greater Boston area that we've worked closely with for a long period of time. We do financial assessments of clubs. We do benchmarking. We have access to a couple of sources of data, and we're always looking for more. Some clubs get themselves in trouble, and we help with turnaround services. And I guess a specialty of ours is helping with project financing management and bank negotiations. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes, clubs only go to the incumbent bank, and that's often not the best deal.
Yeah, I've heard that a few times.
So that's a brief summary of what we're up to.
That's awesome, Dave. Well, thank you very much. Joe, I want to turn it over to you to talk about some of the notable strategic alliances you have. I saw some of the big industry players that you guys are aligned with on your website. So can you talk to us about some of those, Joe?
Yeah, and as Dave indicated, Gabe, that we reached out to the consultants in the field that we had worked in, that we had worked with at our respective clubs, to make sure that what we were doing was complementary and not stepping on toes. And in connection with that, the folks that you have listed here, including RCS Hospitality Group, Condon O'Meara, McGinty Donnelly, Judd Brown Designs, and of course Club Benchmarking, we got into deeper discussions about being strategic alliance partners, working with one another to help each other with our services. We've actually done an engagement with RCS Hospitality Group already, and have cross referred back and forth. So it's a good relationship with Condon O'Meara. Both of us use Condon O'Meara at our respective clubs, and have helped them get into some other clubs. And as you know, we're proponents of clubs using auditors, first of all, having an audit, but secondly, going to a accounting firm that has deep experience with private clubs.
Right. Yeah, totally. Well, that's a perfect segue into my next question, because I know you guys, your firm teamed up with Condon, O'Meara, McGinty, and Donnelly to conduct a best practices audit survey of private clubs. So I'd love, Joe, for you to walk us through some of the findings that came from that study.
Well, it was interesting. We thought initially, and I'm just going to bring it up as we're talking, that as we surveyed clubs, we asked that the general manager respond and that they get a board member to, preferably the president of the treasurer, to also respond. And we thought that there'd be a wide divergence of opinions between the two. And we're kind of pleased to see that while there were differences, there really weren't a lot. The areas that we focused on that kind of were of a concern and consistent with what our practice is asking clubs, first of all, take a step back. If somebody answered yes, it was a best practice. If it was a no response or not sure, it was more or less not a best practice, and it was something a club should focus on. So as an example, we asked clubs, do you have a written strategic plan? And about 60% of respondent clubs had it. About 35% did not.
That's kind of scary, wouldn't you say?
And that kind of gets into some of the other stuff that you see. It has been updated in the last 5 years, and it was sort of directionally the same area, but 60%, about 60% said yes, 35% said no. A little bit scary, but it wasn't a big number, that about 5% said they weren't sure. The big thing for us is it doesn't have a long-term financial plan. So you can do a facilities master plan, you can do a strategic plan, you can do, you know, map out what you're going to do on the golf course. But because clubs consume capital, and as we look at it, clubs should be funding their depreciation, and over a 10-year period, on average, they should be investing 10 to 12 or more into their facility in capital expenditures. And if you don't have a long-term financial plan, and if it isn't funded, clubs are going to run into an issue. So in this case, about 55% of the clubs had one, but 45% did not. So you could have a strategic plan, but it isn't funded, and then it doesn't do you any good.
Right,
as we went down, the long-term plan, does your long-term plan reflect? So if somebody has a long-term plan, does it reflect the expected capital spending over the next 5 to 10 years? Almost 70% of the clubs said yes, which was good for those that do it. 30% said no. But then when you got into, is it funded, which is big, 55% of the clubs said yes, but almost 45% were no and not sure. So you can have a strategic plan, start getting into it, and run out of money and out of resources. So we're advocates of doing a long-term financial plan and having it funded. We also asked, does a club conduct a professional reserve study of its capital assets covering a 15 to 20 year outlook? We are proponents of clubs, as I said, funding their depreciation. But it's good to see on a granular basis doing a reserve study to get a pretty good idea on what significant capital assets might need to be replaced. HVAC units is kind of a big deal. It's a big issue. Irrigation systems are another one. 35% of the clubs said that they did. 55% of the clubs said they did not. And again, a scary number, you know, about 12% of them weren't sure. And that's one that we focus on. So you sort of got to the end and said, is the club current on capital replacement spending? 65% said yes, 30% said no, but that was kind of inconsistent with what some of the other results were. So what we decided to do was, to the extent a club was a 501c7 and filed a 990, we decided to take some of the clubs and, using the available financial information, publicly available, to take a look at their returns and see what we saw. Those that generally had yes answers in the best practices audit survey saw increasing membership dues, consistent initiation fees, increasing capital base. And what we mean by that is capital expenditures equaling or exceeding depreciation expense over a three-year period. Sufficient cash reserves and or other capital revenue to fund capital expenditures, and moderate to no debt. Clubs that had no answers generally had some combination of flat to declining membership dues, decreasing or no membership initiation fees, a declining capital base, which for clubs generally means things are falling into disrepair, you're getting some deferred maintenance, you're not improving your amenities, which are needed to attract new members, little or no cash reserves, modest to no capital income, and or large debt. And we saw a pretty high correlation of smaller clubs with large debt burdens appear to be more adversely impacted. So if, you know, they have a debt burden, which in our view is more than one time their membership dues, it makes it hard for them to invest in their capital plant because they're just paying off the debt.
Right.
Or for some clubs, they use longer amortization periods for their debt. And we'll get into this a little bit later. So you're never paying off the debt. And so, you know, then what you see is, clubs that are stuck. So that's what we saw. There was some other, you know, issues in governance that were of some concern. But, you know, a big one to us was, does the club conduct an annual membership survey? 57% said yes, 41% said no. I think both Dave and I are both, and we use them, doing independent membership surveys at our clubs to make sure we were delivering to the membership what they wanted.
Yeah, totally. What would you say was the biggest surprise that came out of the data set?
It was interesting for us, and Dave can weigh in, I wasn't surprised by the results because we've been looking at clubs now for a year, looking at their financial statements, and this is kind of consistent with what we've been seeing. I don't know, Dave, if you want to add to that.
Yeah, the only thing, I guess I wasn't totally shocked, but there were also comments at the end of the survey that we haven't made public. And it was nice to see some board members say that they really appreciated the survey, but they were almost embarrassed by their responses, that they realized how much work they had to do, and that they were glad that someone had, you know, basically put the list together. So it surprised me a little bit that, you know, some of the senior board members of the clubs would come to that conclusion.
Yeah, sure. Dave, what would you say are some of the trends that you're seeing from a financial perspective in these clubs after looking at the data as well as your work with some of the clubs out there?
Well, I think we're seeing that there's a bit of a bifurcation in the market. The strong clubs are getting stronger and the weaker clubs are getting weaker. And a lot of that is tied to initiation fees. We went through the recession. Many clubs made the decision, well-intentioned, but with hindsight, probably not the best decision to cut or eliminate initiation fees.
Right.
What that did was eliminate a major source of capital funds. And clubs, as Joe mentioned before, started deferring maintenance, putting off capital projects, and getting behind the curve on what the current and probably future crop of members are looking for. They're looking for everything to be brand spanking new, best in class, resort quality. And once you've given up a major source of capital funds, like initiation fees, it's difficult to get back on track.
Yeah.
What that's led to is some ramp up in the use of debt. And debt has to be used very judiciously, but clubs are in a bind. They know they've got to do something. For whatever reason, boards are afraid to go to their members for money, and they use debt and get themselves in trouble. So I think we're seeing that play out, and it's caused a greater bifurcation in the market.
Do you advise clubs on how do they kind of get out of that? We call it a death spiral, I guess, of, you know, when you have no member initiation fees and you're saddled with debt. Is there any advice that you generally give clubs out there?
Well, it's a bit club specific, but we've got to try to convince them that they've got to go back and involve the members. If the members are in it for the long term, it's going to cost them something in the form of capital fees, or bringing in other sources of revenues, increasing the membership. And the way to do that is to deliver what the market wants, which is brands making new facilities. Someone down the road has it, and they better have it too. So it's really about getting back on track, probably finding a way to request more funds from the members, and that requires a compelling, I'm using the word story, but in a good sense, not in a bad sense. I mean, you've got to have a compelling plan that your members buy into and that your future members will buy into.
Yeah. Joe, let me ask you. So I'm sure you've heard of this scenario, and I have some clients that I work with in my consulting practice that, they've been giving discounts, or they've been reducing their initiation fees for so long that their local market now kind of expects that. And I think the worry that a lot of clubs now have is like, well, you know, if we start to actually raise our dues and we don't offer these discounts, nobody's going to actually pay for it. What would you say to somebody who is in that position?
Well, first of all, the club needs to have a value proposition that will attract new younger members. You know, we all know that clubs lose 6 to 7% of their members every year, and they have to replace those members just to keep even. And those members aren't folks of our demographic. It is younger people with families that are looking for amenities. And I think if a club has got appropriate amenities that will attract family members, families will pay for it. And you need to have the funding to be able to pay for it. And you need to do it through initiation fees and through gradual capital assessments and if need be, capital assessments. You can't all be done with debt, because debt has, as we said before, and we'll probably hit on it again, debt needs to be repaid and will prevent future capital investment in the investment in the future. So clubs need to demonstrate a value proposition. And we have seen, particularly in our area in Boston, actually initiation fees increasing because the quality of the amenities are there, and members want to be members of those clubs.
Right. Yeah, no, well said. Would you say that in general, the healthier clubs are raising initiation fees? And even, you know, so I know so many clubs just take pride in their, you know, we haven't raised our fees in 5 years or 10 years. But to me, that's not really a sign of a healthy club. Would you agree with that statement?
There are kind of two answers to the question. One is that your recurring membership dues and fees, you know, you have to understand what the marketplace is so that you're not so far out, but you also need to be, absent great increases in the number of members, your costs go up every year. Your real estate taxes are going to go up. Your payroll taxes are going to go up. Insurance, medical insurance is going to go up. And if you don't, and we've seen this in clubs, if you don't raise your annual dues and fees to keep up with it, then all of a sudden you're robbing from capital to subsidize operations. I think with initiation fees, you kind of have to understand the market, more specifically the demographic that you're after. So for some clubs, they're probably in the right place. Other clubs, there's room to increase.
Sure.
I think it's probably more geographic and demographic specific.
That's excellent.
But in any case, you need to have the amenities to attract the members.
Right. I totally agree with that. So we've got 40 or so percent out there of clubs that aren't conducting a strategic plan or any kind of long-term financial planning. What are some of the first steps you guys would advise clubs take to remedy that?
Well, we like to see it. I mean, if a club can either conduct a strategic planning process in-house, often they bring in a consultant, or we also recommend probably a more abbreviated process of a strategic assessment, where folks like our firm come in, meet with board members, meet with managers, you know, perhaps meet with groups of members, and figure out what they are, and within a relatively short period of time, really just kind of lay out what some of the strategic options are And we try and do it with funding in mind as well, so that the board can reconvene, you know, think of net, with a more focused look at things. And they can either decide to come back and do a, you know, a larger strategic plan, or proceed down one of those paths. But the trick is to get focused, know how it's going to be funded, and, you know, move relatively quickly, primarily because of all of the board turnover that goes on. Boards, as you know, turn over relatively quickly. Yes. And if you don't make progress with the current board, it's hard to maintain momentum through administration changes.
Yeah, absolutely. Dave, this question's for you. What are you seeing in terms of what some clubs out there actually need or could use?
Well, I think we see the need for better board orientations, not for just new board members, but for, you know, each new board has a different complexion to it because of new faces. And for the most part, board work is on-the-job training. So while you may have a lot of life experiences and career experiences and maybe a long-time member of the club, it's different when you're actually sitting in the board seat. And there are some things that maybe not readily apparent that would be very helpful to know up front. We try and explain the legal responsibilities of being a board member. We walk them through what best practices are. Most people have no idea what other clubs are doing in any kind of depth, or why they're doing them that way. We preach that boards are primarily responsible for the long-term financial vitality of the club, and that means long-term thinking. And for us, that means funding a plan, a documented plan, not just project by project. Boards, because of the rapid turnover, often focus on just near-term events without thinking the longer term. So we try and convince them or educate them as to why a longer-term perspective is needed. Many board members think F&B is going to be a gold mine, food beverage, and we educate them on the fact that dues are 100% profit. Food and beverage should be viewed as an amenity, an important amenity, because it touches everyone, but it's not a profit center, and often losing money in F&B and supplementing it by dues results in more satisfied members. We touched on it, but we hit it in orientations that there's an insatiable need for capital in clubs, and to satisfy or come close to satisfy that those capital needs requires a long-term view to increase the capital base. And by capital base, we mean net fixed assets. All of your fixed assets, less the accumulated depreciation. If that number is decreasing, it's a primary indicator of the club that's getting itself in trouble. So some of the those are some of the basics. We also try and mention, as Joe pointed out earlier, that there's considerable attrition each year in clubs, for good reasons, not just because members are dissatisfied, but you have deaths, you have people relocating, you have financial situations, you have folks that are aging, but, you know, somewhere in the 5 to 7% of your membership is going to be moving on each year. You wake up every first of each year knowing you've got to replace that just to stay even.
Right.
And again, it's on-the-job trading. Some of those things just aren't well understood by board members, and perhaps by the time they understand them too well, it's time for them to move off the board.
Right.
Just so out of curiosity, patience is a fact to get them up to speed.
Out of curiosity, do you use, are these live in-person trainings that you advocate? Do you help them create a video or something that they can show to all the incoming boards? How does it work?
To date, it's been live. We like to be in the room, although Joe and I have been discussing perhaps doing some videos as well. We haven't quite gotten there.
Now, I know you guys are sharing a special offer with our listeners. You're offering a complimentary initial assessment. And if our listeners would like to participate, I invite you to head over to their website, which is www.cbpros.com. C as in club, D as in board, pros.com. Can you guys just give us a little bit of what folks will taste when they go through that initial assessment with you?
Typically, we request quite a bit of information up front. Much of it is financial-oriented, membership census-oriented, 5 to 10 years of historical information, so that we can get as smart as we can from an outsider's perspective. We then visit the club. We walk them through our best practices audit, typically spending a day with the manager and some board members, and give them our insights. The best practice survey has been very well received, and it's just a kind of a structured look at their club with an experienced set of eyes.
Fantastic. So again, recommend you check out their website, cbpros.com. Joe and Dave, thank you so much for joining me on this edition of Private Club Radio.
Yeah, it's a pleasure, Dave.
Great stuff from those guys. I always love listening to that Boston accent, that New England accent. Reminds me of my own family, who is from the South Shore of Massachusetts, just a little bit below Boston there on the way to the Cape. And it sounds like home to me. So anyway, great information those guys shared. Really enjoyed that one. Remember, check out that Facebook group, Private Club Radio Listeners Forum. And until next week, here's to your membership success.
Private Club Radio is brought to you by Concert Golf Partners, helping to preserve and enhance private golf and country clubs. Concert Golf has the capital, expertise, and private club hospitality experience to help upscale private clubs achieving long-term success and membership growth. For 25 years, Concert Golf has allowed private club members to focus on simply enjoying their club. Visit concertgolfpartners.com to learn more about the recapitalization process.